The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Welcome you to Motivation and Muscle Streaming Radio. We are the alpha male of radio 24/7. Go out to motivationmuscle.com and you can go out and download our two ebooks. Everyone pretty much knows by now what they are. One to make you think, the other to take action. Obviously, I told you, you're going to see an awful lot of changes here in the next week with both sites. And they're only for the better. And wait to see some of the shots that are coming up on FBC and M&M. And we got two brand new products coming out, which are going to floor you when you see, especially the second one. I've never seen anything out on the market like this. I'm very excited about it. We've got a number of people involved in it. And it's only going to get bigger and bigger because we're going to be going to other sectors of people with this product, and it's going to be, I think this is going to be one of the biggest things you'll see in the industry for a while. And if you understand anything I talk about, you might be able to take a guess at it. So be on the lookout for that. Also, go out to motivationmuscle.com/category/podcast. We got our good friend Mike T. Nelson on today. I did a show with Mike probably about 2 or 3 weeks ago. We introduced him to the family. He's part of the family now. And we're going to bring Mike in momentarily, but go out and check our vault out. Like I said, I believe we're up to over 660 podcasts already, and that's only in not even quite 2.5 years. So I've been a workhorse here, and there's going to be even more stuff coming. So be on the lookout for that. Like I said, we have Mike today on, and I'm going to give you some information on this gentleman. Number one, he has a PhD in exercise physiology, a BA in natural science, and an MS in biomechanics. He's also an adjunct professor and a member of the American College of Sports Medicine. Mike's been featured in international magazines and in scientific publications, and he's on websites across the globe. Mike, welcome back. It's good to have you back. And before I just bring you in momentarily, we're going to talk about something that every guy is just concerned with, and everything you see everywhere is about all males with their testosterone and this, that, and the other thing. And as you know, we have Dr. Wong on here, who's pretty, I think he's one of the foremost people that I've met in testosterone production and building and all that. And Mike obviously is too, and we're going to talk about that today. So Mike, welcome back to the show, my friend.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having me. It's awesome to be back. Really appreciate it.
Well, I like having you here. You're a man that definitely has been around things, done lots of things, and that's what we want here, because we want to give everybody out there, if you're down and out, we're going to give you all the hope. But hope is one thing, but we're going to inspire you to take action. So anything I missed with your introduction, please give it. And, you know, let's start right out with building testosterone, please.
Yeah, if people want more information about me, I've got a 4-week program that's all done for them. They can get for free. Just go to MikeTNelson.com and then /muscle. Or they can, even if they're on their mobile phone, once they're not driving, they can just text the word muscle to 44222. Just text the word muscle to 44222. Plug in your email address and I'll send it to you for free.
And I'm glad you said that, as long as you're not driving.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm sure you and I, well, I can tell you for myself, it scares you, the amount of people that, especially when I'm on a highway and they're looking down and I know what they're doing. Before we start too, I just forgot to read this, and I want to read this today. And I read this a lot, among many things. This is from The Sons of Sisyphus. It's of Stones and Strength by Steve Jack and Peter Martin. I'm not going to read The Sons, but we will one of these times. Again, I did a show on it myself, but I love this line here that Steve wrote. The struggle itself toward the heights is enough to fill a man's heart. I think that is incredible, and I'm just going to add this to everything before we get started. And this is something very important. I want to ask everybody out there, because I've been really contemplating this a lot. Are you doing what you really want to do in life? Has fear got its grip on you? Or has other people just beaten you down so much that now what you deemed was really important, you've just shoved aside, you buried it? I want you to think about that today, because you know what? You need to renew what you love to do. I'm sure Mike can attest to that. I surely can. No matter what happens, see it through. I guarantee you, you will be a success. Mike, if you want to add anything to that, if not, let's start building some manliness.
Yeah, the only thing I would add is that, not that people need either one of our permission to do what they want with their life, but I think that they have both our permission to design their lifestyle exactly how they want to do it. Mm-hmm. And doing things that they enjoy a lot of times will lead to helping others at the same time. And those are not mutually exclusive. They're usually highly related to each other. And if the world had more people that were doing what they're truly passionate about, I think it would be a much better place.
Oh, I agree with you totally. And you know something? You know from being an entrepreneur and working with people consistently and, you know, seminars and all that, my opinion is the more you do it, the more you get out there, your life is not only going to be better, but you're going to make things better for other people and inspire other people to go after their greatness, because that's happened with here numerous times. I get letters from people all the time. We just had Sean Berkey on here the other day. He was a college professor. He found us in 2014 when we came out. He said, I couldn't believe what I was listening to. And I said, do you remember how you found me? He goes, no, I don't. But he goes, I can tell you this. This was even before, I think, Mike, that we really had, we had maybe a few guests. That was it. I was doing shows on my own. He said, I immediately downloaded the first 40 shows. They were so good. And basically, I was just a pup doing it then. But I just want to tell people, I knew what I wanted to do. And no matter what the consequences or what was coming out of this, I just went after it full bore. And you have to be willing to commit to that and do it. All right, Mike. Manliness, testosterone, building it. We hear a lot of that all over the place, of course. It seems like if you listen to, if you're watching television or through any sports, every guy in the world's got ED. Well, maybe 75% do now. I don't know. But let's get right into testosterone training, what your feelings are on it, and away we go.
Yeah, so just a brief primer is that I do agree that testosterone is one of the main male hormones. That's definitely something I agree with. The biggest, I think, sort of misconception about it, though, is, and this is kind of more the American way, that, you know, more is always better.
Right.
And what you find in physiology is that a lot of things are very nonlinear. So, which we'll talk about coming up, that if you're what they consider hypogonadal, so your testosterone levels are super low, yes, getting back into a normal range will definitely be beneficial for you. Mm-hmm. If you're using, you know, substances that are considered illegal by most areas, and especially in the U.S., to get to a super physiologic level, so you're off the right end of the spectrum super high, yeah, you can see performance changes with that, additional risks and other things too. The misconception, I think, comes in that if I'm in the normal range, if I get to sort of a high normal versus normal, that everything's going to be infinitely better. And while there's only really one study that's looked directly at that from Basheen in the mid-90s, most of the data we have says that that's probably not going to matter that much. You know, as long as you're in kind of the nice and good normal range for that, you're probably fine. And I think a lot of people go wrong trying to sort of maximize that normal range when they should be focusing on just other aspects of their life and training.
No, I agree. And anything I've read or talked to different people, we want to at least, I still think it's low, but I think I was reading somewhere, it was like mid threes to, well, I've read studies as high, and I don't know if this is legal or what they're, if it's, you know, not natural. I've read it as high as like 1,200. What do you feel, being that you've looked at the studies and things like that, what is a good barometer for a healthy male with testosterone?
Yeah, so there's some debate about what sort of the low end is, and that changes depending on who you talk to and that type of thing. But if you go by the stats that LabCorp puts out, they'll say that, under about 348 nanograms per deciliter is considered hypogonadal.
Yep.
If you get above about, 1197, that's considered kind of the super physiologic range.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some stuff published that says 348 is low, 250 is low, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So it does kind of vary. I think for each person, as long as you're in the, 400 to 800 range, I think you're probably going to be okay. But, I've gotten a fair amount of emails from guys who are like, oh, I just had my testosterone checked and it's only 500. I need to go talk to my doctor about doing something else. I'm like, you're perfectly normal. Now, you may have some other things going on that you may need to sort out.
Sure.
But in terms of a testosterone level, you're doing pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know this has become such a big thing, but I mean, there's other things. You read in how important insulin is, obviously. Mm-hmm. And you don't hear a lot. Well, I'll put it this way. Testosterone dominates every subject. Anybody I talk to when we're out training, obviously we know now with environmentally, and I don't really want to get into all that because right now I'm a little bit tired of hearing all about environmental things. I've kind of got a pretty good feel for it and grasp. I don't know if I'm going to blame every single thing with males on environmental stuff, but we do know that due to, if you're buying things in packages to eat, cans and things of that nature, which you got to be very careful of, you are asking for trouble. We know plastics, what they contribute with male hormones. If you read anything, laundry detergents, all this stuff has more of a feminizing effect on men. Let's get into that a little bit, Mike. I want to talk to you a little bit about insulin, obviously. And, we see a lot of males, especially even 30s now, where 40s, 50s, 60s, where obviously they have breasts, basically because, there's an overabundance of female hormones in them. But let's first talk a little bit about insulin and the role it plays in the body.
Yeah, so my bias is I think insulin is a little bit better thought of as a fuel selector switch.
Yep.
I got that from Jeff Bullock, the researcher.
Yep.
So that when insulin levels are high, you're actually pushing your body to primarily use more carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you're doing the opposite of storing more fat at that time. When insulin levels are lower, you push the body to primarily use fat as the main fuel source.
Yep.
So I think in that context, there are times of the day that you want insulin to be higher, and there's times of the day you probably want it to be lower.
Mm-hmm.
We just take a snapshot of your day, and we kind of throw out the average numbers for now. So I like to have people consume some type of protein, carbohydrate before heavy weight training sessions.
Yep.
And then also after. Research on the nutrient timing effect of that is pretty split right now. But what you're trying to do is increase the levels of insulin before training.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing heavy weight training, the main fuel that you're using is actually carbohydrates.
Yep.
And then afterwards, there's a fair amount of data to show that higher levels of insulin can help suppress cortisol, which is kind of a muscle munching hormone. And the rest of the day, I like to have insulin in generally be a little bit lower.
Correct.
Right? So you're eating more vegetables, protein, fats.
Yep.
And that doesn't mean that you can't have a single carbohydrate or you have to be real neurotic about it or anything like that. I just think that will set you up a little bit to use carbs when you need to and then still use fat when you need to.
No, I agree totally. I might have even told you I'll have carbohydrates, obviously, before I train. But one thing I found eating during the day, because you just hit upon that with the fats and the vegetables, the more fats I seem to eat through the day, and it's no coincidence, my training is usually much better because I normally train at night, sometimes in the morning, sometimes in the afternoon. Mainly my training is at night after the whole day's cooled down I'm usually outside by like 7 p.m., you know, Eastern Standard Time. For some reason, I seem to always perform very, very good at night. We, even when we were much younger, we trained at night, you know, mainly because you got school, your friends are training with you, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I'm not saying I don't have good times during the day. I think the fresher you are, the better, but I've also been fresh and not done well either, at least in my opinion. Nighttime, I like the idea. I like dark. I mean, my whole yard's lit up like it's daylight, but I like training at night. I just do. It's a preference, and that's the way it is. Next thing before we get into like the estrogens and things of that nature and exercise, I was going to ask you this, and I'm glad you said the word cortisol. And we know cortisol can really, if that stuff is off the beam, we've got some problems right there with our training, testosterone, et cetera, et cetera. Cortisol, in your opinion, is this another thing that we got to be very cognizant of, or is it like everything? A lot of things now are just blown out of proportion. What's your feeling? Let's talk about like you and I. I mean, I've seen what you do training. You know a little bit what I do with stones and this very heavy, unruly rack work. Let's talk about cortisol on you and I, and it will gravitate to everybody, but how much of that does that have on guys like us the way we train?
Yeah, with cortisol, it's, again, very interesting, is that you want it, again, at the right time. So if you look at there's actually different drugs that bodybuilders played around with in the early 80s of basically just crushing their cortisol levels and never do that because, one, it didn't really help them, and then, two, it's incredibly dangerous if they ever needed a procedure or anything like that.
Yep.
And you will actually compromise your training. So if you look at what cortisol is a stress hormone, but it's designed to mobilize fuel. So when you train, you actually want cortisol levels to acutely come up. So you're mobilizing more fuel for training. The thing where people go wrong is that their lifestyle in general, the rest of the time outside of the gym, is pretty stressful.
Oh, yeah.
So their cortisol levels go up all the time, and they tend to stay up. And then cortisol is just a response to overall stress.
Yep.
So what I think about it is that the more aggressive or more, you know, harder you can train, the rest of your lifestyle has to be pretty much in line. And there's genetic exceptions and there's freaks and that kind of stuff. But if the rest of your lifestyle is incredibly stressful, adding more stress via training is not a good idea. That's, and again, that doesn't mean that, you know, the training with stones and other things like that is a bad idea. It's just not a good idea to add to someone's whose lifestyle is just completely out of control. But if the rest of your lifestyle is good, your stress level is good, then you have that sort of capacity, you know, to push a little bit more in the gym, do more work, you know, lift heavier, things of that nature, and you can still recover from that. So the hallmarker is that if you can go back in the next couple of days, you know, and do another session, that's a pretty good performance.
Yeah.
If you did a heavy session and you're toast for like a week or two, that session's probably too much for you, but I would really look at what's going on in the rest of your life that's not allowing you to recover from that.
No, I totally agree with you because I don't know what it is. You know, well, I do know what it is, a lot of it. You know, everything's fast, fast, fast. I look at my sister, you know, both her and my brother-in-law are teachers. They work all day. The kids are going, if it's not piano, it's gymnastics, track. I mean, the thing, what's different now, and it hasn't been that long ago that I was a kid, we never participated in every single thing out there. And my feeling is, I even see it in kids, young kids. They are just pushed to the limit all the time, and suddenly something is going to break. And usually it's going to be you before whatever else you're doing. I mean, that's just the way it is. You're a human being. And I think we talked on the last show about with the younger kids and the way they're pushed and the way, you know, a lot of the parents are living vicariously through them. This is not a good way. And, you know, you're talking cortisol. Look out. What I have found too, Mike, and I do this with anybody I train, obviously I'm sure you do too, and I'll let you speak upon that. You can't expect somebody, especially if they've got problems with weight, they haven't trained in, say, 25 years, you know, since high school, They're a hard sell mentally because, you know, they just have that attitude where, what's the difference? You know, I'm 45 years old. It's the aging process. When somebody says that to me, I want to rip their head right off them. But you know what I mean? We're faced with these things, and, you know, physical things are just, in my opinion, are just manifesting out of what you're thinking about yourself, internalized. And you know, we know so much now. Well, everybody's writing something about the whole mental trajectory of your brain, so to speak, and how to beat this, how to beat that. I think it's good. I think it all has merit to a point. But I'll say it, and I'll keep saying it till the day we're off here. And I know this is very hard for a lot of people to comprehend, and a lot of people just don't have the confidence yet. I'm not saying they never will, because I think everybody can improve upon everything. But you really got to learn how to do some things for yourself. And what I do here with anybody that comes here, obviously, we've got to take small steps. I don't care if you tell me you used to lift a house. Well, you don't look now like you could lift a Volkswagen. All right, so what we have to do is we have to take these small steps and build these individuals back. Now, the biggest thing of all is, are they going to buy into what you propose? And are they going to be willing to have the patience to know that we're not selling an infomercial here in 90 days that promises you, you know, if you take this this supplement, or, you know, you see all these celebrities pushing this, that, and the other thing. And I'm listening to what they're talking to, and I said, there's no way that these formulas are knocking 80 pounds, 50 pounds off them. I don't believe it, all right? So that's my thing on that. But but you know, before we get into the estrogen and the exercise, why is it you think at this point, let's just stick with the male. I mean, is it just too much sports? Is it too much cross-pollination of, well, this one can't do it, so why can I, et cetera, et cetera. Where are we today, especially with men? I mean, we're talking about testosterone. You know, I look at a lot of even friends of mine. They're getting guts now. They don't seem the same to me either. From a psychological, mental point of view, it's like they seem to have lost I like to say, you know, the spring in your step. The gas out of their voice, you know, like they just sound like they've dropped decibels with everything. So what do you think about that when we're talking?
Yeah, I think it can be, my gut feeling is a lot of things. And my buddy Carl Lenore made this analogy once that I love, that if you're working in a warehouse and there's 100 lights in there and one light goes out every day,
yep,
and that's where you live, you don't really notice it, right? Until,
yep,
someone walks in from the outside and goes, hey, what are you doing sitting in the dark?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
Not that dark in here.
Yeah.
It's just like we're talking about with weather, right? Because
yeah,
your nervous system is wired to be comparative.
Yep.
So I just got back from presenting at a International Society of Clinical Neuroscience in Florida. I live in Minnesota, and it's 5 above today. So I walk outside, and I'm like, oh,
yeah,
man, this feels cold.
Yeah.
Where normally it's like, eh, it's cold, but it's not that bad.
No.
So I think in a lot of the people I see, until they start to feel better,
yes,
they didn't really know how bad they felt.
Yeah.
They kind of assume that, oh, it's the aging process, it's normal. They kind of know that they feel a little bit off, but once they feel better, pretty much across the board, everyone's like, oh, wow, I did feel really crappy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and this is the thing, you know, it's like the old saying, it's funny the things you can get used to.
Yes.
And I said to somebody the other day that, you know, I've been working with on and off. I said, you know, I've tried to be very diplomatic with you in a lot of ways, but I'm going to tell you something right now, and this is truthful to you. Don't wait until something happens, and I mean some type of major health issue with you. You got an opportunity now to start taking care of things. It's time you start thinking on those lines. And I don't know if it got through to him. I hope it did. He doesn't have to come here. He can go anywhere he wants. But this is the kind of guy that you see. You know, you'll hear about, you know, the males with the spare tire, and then the ones that I've dealt with where literally they look 9 months pregnant and the stomach starts right from the breastbone down. That's, if that isn't a red warning sign, I don't know what is to you. And if you have histories of this in your family, we know when you see a gut like that, you definitely got low T. There's no doubt in my mind with that, because I just can tell by the way you talk and how docile you become. Remember, I know this individual 20 years ago, and let me tell you, and I know people get older, everybody. I'm not immune to this, but when you start having red flags like that, you damn well better take care of it, and don't wait till a Monday morning like they all say, where everybody's all anxietied up Sunday night because they don't want to go to a job they hate Monday morning. And next thing you know, they drop dead. How many people? Monday mornings are the day for everybody to drop dead, especially males. So if you want to comment on any of that, but let's get into, obviously, estrogen. And we know men, by the time, well, I bet you it's even earlier now. The articles I've read, by the 40s, usually they have more estrogen than their wives. But I would venture to gather, because I've read so many studies on even males in their 20s, 30s, are already having issues like that. And we spoke a little bit earlier about, obviously, you know, what you're buying in a box or a can or you know, obviously the plastics, the estrogens. I mean, look at everybody. Well, I don't do it if I don't have to. You know, every time I see somebody, they got a bottle of water in their hands. So, Mike, agree, disagree, comment on that, and we'll roll from there, please.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree in the sense that I think estrogen is becoming a bigger issue in terms of the sad part is the environment's just not as clean as it used to be. Like most things you see in the news and that type of thing, that's a lot of times blown out of proportion to you.
Yep.
Because I've had questions from people that are like, oh, should I eat out of this plastic container? And they're not training, they're sleeping 4 hours a night and going to McDonald's.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
so it's
absolutely.
Like, well, if you want to switch to a ceramic container, especially if you're heating things up, you're adding heat to the equation.
Yep.
I think that's probably going to be better. But you know, there's other changes you can make too. Another part to that, I think that one of the best resources I found for that is called the Environmental Working Group.
Okay.
If you just go to EWG.org.
Yep.
They're a nonprofit group. They're pretty middle of the road. I mean, they try to use a lot of science on that.
Yeah.
They've got, you know, some good stuff on looking at different types of sunscreens and different, you know, cosmetics and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So that's usually where I refer people to as close as you can get to as a non sort of biased source on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just have people look at, you know, what they're eating, nutrition, and things of that nature. And it's always hard to tease things apart because, like what you were saying, is that a lot of the more heavily processed food, which is missing a lot of nutrients and things of that nature, also happens to be, you know, packaged in that type of container too.
Correct.
So, yeah, you may have some, you know, xenoestrogens and things of that nature, but you also got that combined with someone who's eating, you know, lower quality intake food. at the same time. So,
And I think you made a great point there too. You know, I know a lot of this stuff. I like the idea you talk science because you and I both know a lot of these firms are paid by the government. They're very political organizations, and they have a major influence on people, whether it's a positive or negative. But I'll tell you one thing, and I want to hit this, and then we're going to get into movements, exercising. Soy, I think it's a male killer. It's and the thing that bothers me more than anything right now, and I try to stay away from it knowingly as much as I can. I'm not going to say that I never get it because some stuff I don't know. If I go out, I've got, and I ask a lot of people, and they don't even know half of what I'm even talking about. I'll tell you a quick story. I had to go, there's a certain yogurt I like, and the co-op here was out of it. So I had to go to a place I really don't enjoy and I won't endorse anyways. I had to go to Whole Foods. And I was looking through the meat, and there was a piece of meat there, you know, grass-fed that I wanted to get. And I know the deal of grass-fed because I know a lot of it's not finished. But I also know from reading that even the beef there, not only there, they do have soy silage fed to the animals. So there was a bunch of people there, and me being probably the guy, probably he looked at me like he wanted to break my neck. I said to him, is there any soy in this meat? Well, this guy looked at me, and all these people are looking at me, and I don't know how much they knew about it. And he says, they have this book that has all the listing of what's in the meat. There you go, man. It had soy in it. I was like, I said, no, thank you, because what I do all the time, they won't fight you too much. As I say, I'm allergic to it. And when you say something like that, man, they'll hop right to it and find out if they don't know. Now, not all of it had it in there. The grass-finished ones were okay. But, you know, you want to get a filet or something, you're talking about the size of a half dollar for like $39 a pound. And if you think I'm paying that, you're out of your mind. That isn't going to happen. But there are a lot of other grass-fed things there that were finished with soy. I just want everybody to know, I mean, when you go places and you pay that kind of money for meat, I mean, it's only if you care. I would definitely ask that question. But that's why I want to ask you, soy. What's your feeling with soy, especially, you know, the most of the studies I've read, obviously, it's an enemy to testosterone in a male, but maybe you got a different version of it, Mike. Take it away.
Yeah, so my biased opinion, just for me personally, is I try to avoid it, but if I have some, I don't freak out about it.
I got you.
So
yep.
If I use a main protein supplement, if I'm working with someone who's a guy who can't tolerate a whey protein or dairy, I'll have them use like a rice or egg or something like that.
Yep.
I don't really want them taking high amounts of a soy as a supplement because that amount can be pretty high over time.
Yep.
In terms of the research on that, a lot of the stuff was in back in the 70s, and it did show that there may be some effect. There isn't too much recently. There was an acute study, a 14-day study done from Dr. Bill Kramer, Journal of American College of Nutrition, and this was in 2013. And they did compare a whey protein to a soy protein over 14 days. And they did see that the soy protein did partially blunt serum testosterone a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, relatively high amount consumed daily, and then it's an acute study too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if people can avoid it, that's probably good. The other part too is that there's a big difference between just soy and also fermented types of soy.
Right.
So the estrogens and things of that nature don't appear as much in fermented sources of soy.
Mm-hmm.
So it also depends on the type and how it's manufactured and things of that nature too.
Well, I read an interesting thing when you talk about the 70s, and I have read a few things here and there, which I was surprised even a few MDs came out against soy. What I had read when it was very popular, because a lot of women weren't breastfeeding, they were giving their young boys soy, you know, as babies. And I've read it a number of times, and I should have written it down, that a lot of their genitalia didn't develop correctly. Very interesting studies. Areas that you should be developed in were not developed very well. And they attributed it to soy. I've read a lot of naturopaths, a lot of things. Of course, they're very hardcore against it. A lot of them definitely feel it's a feminizing agent for a male. And I'll be honest with you, Mike, I think today males are in serious trouble. I've seen enough of them. I've trained enough of them. I've watched, in my opinion, the demise of a male in a lot of ways. That could be a whole nother show in itself.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get into that right now because of our time, too. But let's get right into exercise. And you know something? I'll tell you something right now, Mike. We have plenty of women here on the show, very strong women. You can talk about any of this stuff with them. But right now, especially I look at, you know, like my nephew and what we're doing with him and not forcing him, where you see a six-year-old now lifting an 8 and 12-pound sandbag. Me telling Danny when he's 13, he's going to deadlift 500 pounds. The way I'm programming him and not forcing him if he wants to keep doing it. I want to let men know that you can still be a very strong male and be a good man I think that men have gotten a pretty bad rap in the last 35 years with a lot of things. I think the American male, especially from what I've read and what I've witnessed, I think a lot of them are very lost. They've lost their mojo, their confidence. A lot of them, I have friends of mine that I've met through other people where they just don't seem to have a lust for life. I mean, of course, I'm going at things a lot different. You know, I love the idea of being able to get on a plane and going to Iceland and Scotland and Wales and being out in the middle of nowhere, you know, where we know bloody battles were fought and going out and lifting stones. I think the male today needs stuff like that. I don't care if you start with a sandbag. I think there's something, you know, I know this word like physical culture, in my opinion, is very overused, and that's all the primal stuff now. But I will tell you this, as a man, the first time I ever touched a stone, just like a barbell, just like a power rack, it did something to me. We got in a big discussion about this the other day with DNA. What is it that sets this stuff off in you? It's there, obviously. It's roaming, obviously. What is it? I gave many examples the other day. The two mainly was Jimmy, my brother, and the Incredible Hulk. I'm not going to get into that. That's a whole nother show right there. But we talked about that, and I think every male out there has it in them. Whether it'll lay dormant the rest of its life in you, that I can't tell you. But there are certain things, you know, we always say call to action. There's a call to action within all of us that whatever it is can create this. And let me tell you something. What you think that might not be worthwhile might not only be a lifesaver for you, but it could make the rest of your life so much better. Comment on any of that, and then let's get into some of the prime movers you feel that are going to blow some testosterone up in us men.
Yeah, I think my comment is that nowadays for men, I don't think there's really a rite of passage slash an expectation.
Yep.
And again, that can be its own show. But as you know, like even back in the day, they used to keep different strongmen and implements behind the bar.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So guys
would
come in and they'd have, you know, impromptu contests of different things.
Yep.
You know, there's the manhood stones, things of that nature.
Yep.
I mean, pretty much anywhere you go back in history, there's always been some sort of rite of passage, and there was also the expectation that, you know, this is obtainable for most people.
Yeah.
Where now I think we've kind of lost what that is, and you know, even a lot of people I train, it's they don't know what are the other options.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think there's something that I have yet to have someone who's lifted a stone correctly that didn't enjoy it.
I think there's something just
very hardwired in us that the more primitive it is, it's almost a little bit more pleasurable.
Yeah.
And I think part of that now, like you've alluded to a lot, is that you're doing things that other people are not necessarily doing.
Yep.
And I think once you can kind of, you know, cultivate that, there's a huge payoff for it.
Oh, I agree totally. And you hit it just right with the manhood stones. There is no rite of passage anymore. I do believe, like, you know, I've talked to the guys, all the stone lifters over in Scotland, they're on the show. You're starting to see now more and more kids getting into this. I think it's spectacular, and I'm going to do everything in my power to bring it here. And I've got a lot of support from, like, Charlie and Martin and Stevie Shanks and all those guys. We're becoming more and more involved in this, and we want to touch the younger kids. I don't care how old you are. You alluded to it, and I'll just build on it, and we'll go right to the movements, is this. There is something within us when we grab that, because we were labor, and we've lost a lot of labor due to technology. Right or wrong, you can decide on your own. But I'll tell you right now, like a day like today, I was telling Mike before we came on, it is snowing here like you would not believe. We're really getting our first storm, and it's magical to me. I love it, and most people hate it. They're all unnerved right now. You talk about cortisol levels. I bet if you went and measured the majority of them right now, they'd blow up, all right? My point is this. I wish I didn't train last night, even though I had a fabulous night. I'd love to be out lifting stones right now. I'd be walking in the snow with them. Just why? because I love it, because it makes me mentally tougher, because when you love and you enjoy something that much, I don't care if you can only walk 15 feet, you're going to do it, and you're going to do it with magic, man, precision, all those great things we talk about. How about this? And testosterone. So let's get right in. I know that why don't you give one – what do you feel is one of the prime movers out there to build us men some big-time testosterone, Mike?
Yeah, so if we look at what exercises promote an acute release of testosterone, and we'll get into if that's useful or not, any more compound-type exercise will pretty much do it. Like research from Dr. Bill Kramer's lab has looked a lot at squats, mm-hmm. you know, deadlifts, pretty much anything where you're moving a fair amount of your muscle mass under load will do that for you.
Yep. Do you feel, I mean, people argue the fact squat, deadlift. What's your feeling between the two of them? Does one produce more than the other? Obviously, you probably favor one over the other. What's your feeling on those two movements?
Yeah, I haven't seen any research that shows there's any difference for testosterone output.
Okay.
The one that's classically used in most of the research is the squat.
Yep.
And some of that just ends up being because you can then refer to previous literature if you're trying to tweak the study a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Where if you use, let's say, a deadlift and you can't find any research to show that there's an effect from the deadlift, you then have to run a study first showing that there is an effect with the deadlift and then the next condition you wanted to look at. So sometimes research ends up only looking at one area just because of where the original research started.
No, I agree. I will say this. I love the deadlift, and it's a big primer for stone work. But one thing I've always favored over it about the squat, with the squat. And now everybody knows that I don't do any rebound squats. Once in a while, I'll practice them. But I do everything from all different positions in the rack, and I start them dead stop. For anyone that doesn't know what that means or is not familiar, there is no rebound. I don't start the lift from the top and go down and come up. I start it right at the very bottom, which is brutal. And the thing I've always liked about the squat more than the deadlift is this. I'm just a guy that likes things pushing down on me, whether it's business. I like the feeling of saying, okay, you're coming up or you're not, period. See, the thing I like about what I do with those movements is this, and I can do the same thing with the with the deadlift. Even if I pull from the floor, I can pull from the floor against rods. Everybody knows we can do a mid-shin, knee, over the knee, whatever you want to do. I'm not even going to argue the fact there. But the thing with the dead stop squat, you got to have such precision when you get under that thing and come up. Why? If you're off even an eighth of an inch, chances are you might come up on one side and have to drop it. Or if you're strong enough, you'll fight through it and get up. See, the thing with the dead stop squat is it's always a fight. It's always a fight. There are going to be days where you will explode weights, and that's the idea. You want to have a lot of explosion and move that. I mean, when you're moving 650 pounds like I did last night, even though it was 2 inches above parallel, now I'll slide the boards in, get it down the 2 inches quickly, and start moving up more and more because now I'm really dedicated to getting back into that again, start doing some high-end partials at the top, all that good stuff. But the one thing I love about the dead stop is it really feels like a slugfest every time you're doing it. It's a lot of fun, but you have to have the disposition, the strength, the ability to start it from nothing and grow it, and it does not just happen in 90 days. But I'm going to tell you right now, I'm writing a big article right now about the argument for the dead stop squat, along with a lot of power lifting material that I've why I do it, who are my big influences on it, and I'm hoping to have that done within the next couple weeks. I've got three people that are contributing to it, just even a couple lines that I've worked with or are now subscribed to it. Obviously, you know, Bud Jeffries hit 1,000 yep. pounds from there. You know, Bud's with us on every month. But I'm taking this thing a little bit further even. I was telling Mike before we come on, John McKean, who is one of the greatest people I've ever met, lifter, everything he wrote for Hard Gainer, he's in All Around Lifting, phenomenal lifter. And when I banged my shoulder up and could not get my arm back there comfortably the way I wanted to, we went to a tri-quad dead stop squat. Let me tell you something. Try to squat without any hands on a bar behind you. Then come talk to me if you want to know what that's all about, all right? Because we're going to do some filming shortly of it and put it all up. But I'm telling you right now, I would plead with everybody, give the dead stop stuff a try. Now, Mike, have you done much dead stop-wise or not? Yourself, I'm talking.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. I started doing that again probably about 4 months ago.
Okay, yep.
Just trying to rework on my squat particularly. And the thing that I started doing, there's two things, and it's probably related to what you do already, is for a true dead stop, you probably need maybe up to a 5 seconds in the bottom.
Yeah.
To try to eliminate that stretch shortening effect, basically yep. stretching all the muscle and tendon and fascia as you go down.
Yep.
That's based on research actually from a bench press out of Australia. The other part that I started doing that'll sound absolutely bonkers, but has worked really well, is to start with a lightweight, go all the way down to the bottom position.
Yep.
Stop for around 5 seconds.
Yep.
And in the bottom position, I'm actually belly breathing.
Oh,
and
wow.
And then I'll come back up again.
Nice.
So my thought process on that was, one, belly breathing increases what's called parasympathetic tone in your body. It yep. makes you a little bit more relaxed.
Yep.
Because my thought being, if I'm at the bottom and I think that this weight is absolutely going to crush me and yep. I may not make it.
Yep.
I'm running the risk maybe of injury, and also I'm really teaching my body that that's actually hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to do the opposite. I want to teach my body that a progressively heavier load is actually easier.
Yes.
So how would I teach my body that it's easier? Obviously progression, all the wonderful things you guys talk about. But if I can belly breathe in that position, I'm neurologically teaching my body that it's an okay, it's a safe position, and yep. then come back up.
Yep.
The other thing, too, I started doing this with clients a couple months ago, is the psoas, which is one of the main hip flexors,
yep.
starts in your femur, comes up through your pelvis, attaches to your low back on the front and the back, and then the rest of the fibers actually become part of the diaphragm,
mm-hmm.
which most people don't appreciate. And if you can belly breathe, so belly breathing is using more diaphragmatic breathing, and my guess is that that allows the psoas to function better.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that it's not locking you as much, like leaving the parking brake on the way up.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
And most people who do this will report that their concentric, so coming back up,
yep.
is much faster. So I did this with a client here locally, and he was, I think he added like 3 or 4 reps to, I think he was squatting with around 500, I think.
Yeah, yep,
in like 6 to 8 weeks. And it looked a lot better. So very nice fluid motion,
mm-hmm.
Didn't get stuck, anything like that. And now he wasn't belly breathing at the bottom when he was doing his actual test for reps, but he said most of his training was a dead stop training, belly breathing in the bottom position and then
yep.
coming back up.
No, that makes sense. Because one thing I will stress with that type of training, you do have to build explosion just to get out of the hole. And even if
yep.
it feels like it's taking forever to come up and then, you know, stand up, or if you're doing holds against the other rods or whatever you're partaking in, you do have to have that initial burst. And sometimes the bar moves quick with no matter what you got on it. Other times you grind it out, and sometimes you just move it an inch and it drops right back down on you. And there's your little isometric for the day. I'm with you with the squat. I'm sure the deadlift, I love overhead, obviously. But if you told me I could only do one barbell movement the rest of my life, you're going to throw me on an island with a power rack and a buffalo bar. You know what my choice is going to be. I'll go out and find rocks and trees to rip down and all that stuff over there. I don't care. But yes, I am, I'm a major proponent of the squat, dead stop especially. I love it. I just love that feel. Mike, we're at time. If you'd like to summarize anything, that would be great. Give out all your info, and I'll give mine, and we will get ready for March, please.
Yeah, so just real quick in summary, it is true that if you do more heavier compound lifts, you will increase acute levels of testosterone. The caveat to that, though, is that there's a study from David West, a couple studies, showing that those changes did not necessarily contribute to greater strength or hypertrophy.
Yep.
So real briefly, what they did is they did, guys came into the lab, they did a squat, and then they did bicep curls with their right arm. Had a day off, came back in on a Wednesday then, and they did their left arm first and then the squat. Mm-hmm. So the squat will increase acute testosterone. So their right arm was exercised under that condition. Their left arm was not. At the end of the study, they didn't see any difference between their right arm versus their left arm. So I think it goes back to what are the main training principles. I think that, you know, testosterone is definitely good. Should you be altering all your programming to get a higher level of acute testosterone? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the things that result with that are the things that you'd want to program in your training.
Yeah.
So, you know, different types of rest periods, you talked about different positions, compound lifting. So I think those things in and of themselves are beneficial, and that the acute level of testosterone may not be the main player there. But definitely your lifestyle, as we talked about,
yeah,
training, stress, that will definitely make a big difference overall.
I agree. And something I said in the beginning, and I do believe it works, get yourself an egg timer, figure out how long you want to go. Do your warm-up, be done in 30 minutes. It's going to make you concentrate harder. You're going to have to work a hell of a lot harder. You're probably not going to make it a lot of times, but I'm telling you right now, Mike said it, the idea is you want to be able to come back in 2 days. You don't need to do a squat workout or whatever you're doing and you're dead on your feet for 10 days. That you're going the opposite direction there. So think about that, everybody. Mike, give out your website, anything that's going on. I'll give my stuff out, and just hang on the line if you would, please.
Sure. People can find more information about me at miketnelson.com, miketnelson.com. You go /muscle. I've got all done program that does include all the different lifestyle parameters and everything there for you. Or you can text the word muscle to 44222. And you can get it that way also.
All right. You had everything?
Yep, that's cool.
Okay. This is Motivation Muscle Streaming Radio 24/7. You know the deal. Go out to motivationmuscle.com. Download our two free ebooks. Also, go out to motivationmuscle.com/category/podcast. Go out and look at our vault of information. Also, we are out on iTunes and Stitcher. Give us a 5-star review. That's what we've gotten, and we appreciate it. If there's a show you'd like Mike and I to do together, specifically, Fiorella Barbell at nicap.r.com. Also, if someone, obviously, we're also on AHA. Anybody that has new, any type of radio in their new car, you can get now internet through that. If you go out to AHA, Motivation Muscle, you have it in your car 24/7. And I know they also make aftermarket stereos for your car, too. If someone seeks you out in the gym or the concrete jungle, never be afraid to give them words of wisdom. Inspiration, 5 words will change your life. As my mom said when we were kids, never be afraid to say hello to someone or give them a smile. That might be all they get that day. If you're going to lift it, bend it, break it, pull it, push it, press it. If you're going to tear stones off the ground, turn them into dust. As the great Hoosa Steel Crusher says in Blood Red, domination. We are domination. We clear cut the path. We don't follow anyone's. And be on the lookout. We did some pretty sharp. I put it up the other day. We did some really nice stone work with Dennis, who's here, who we're going to knock 71 pounds off him by June. He's already down to 259. And I can see metabolically just he was training much better. We went a heavy and light stone. There was a lot of people contacting me. How are you doing it? What are you weight? What are they weighing, et cetera, et cetera. You haven't seen anything yet. And I'm going to start doing some Sundays with them where I'm going to start stone training for Iceland with more distance. I've got so many things I can teach out there that I don't know if people's even seen the stuff that I've done with metal stones. You're going to. And it's going to be pretty exciting to see some of the stuff I do to get ready. And this stuff will, as they say, we used to laugh. There was a guy, he was a bodybuilder local here. He's a big dude, and he was like a power guy. And I've heard him, I think I've read it before, too. He used to always say, you do stuff like that, it'll literally put weight on a rake handle. Well, you train with that stuff, I'm telling you, you can be anything you want to be. But we'll get more into that as we go along. Also, too, dominate, obliterate, and dent everything in your path. No one will ever clip our balls. And as Russell Fur says, has been listening to Eminem from the beginning. When I listen to your shows, I swear there's testosterone dripping through my speakers. That's every day here, my friend, and it's only going to get bigger and bigger for the next 28 years. And thank you for that compliment. Frank Klein, who was definitely probably by far the best college teacher I ever had. Repetition, repetition, repetition. My dad, be a leader, not a follower. Be a leader, not a follower. John Ridge, my chiropractor for many years, who we lost to cancer now almost 3 years ago. He'd walk every patient in the door and say, keep smiling. I dare you say that and not smile. John was a great guy, and I miss our Fridays, man. Big part of this whole Eminem and FBC. I've talked about it before. Those three gentlemen and my brother Jimmy, there's not a day that doesn't go by that they're not in my thoughts, whether they're thinking about me or I am them. It's always there. Be a steward of strength. Don't stand on the side of the road and watch the world go by. And also, too, tell 100 of your friends or more that we're coming for you. We will not knock on your door. We'll put our foot right through it. Join our family. Join our revolution. This is the real deal. And I'm telling you right now, I hope everyone out there listening is going to go after their dream. Because Mike and myself, I know that we're doing what we want to do. This is what we were called upon to do. It's time you all take a chance on yourself. Stop settling. Stop letting others decide what you're going to be or not be. And I mean that. Mike, thank you once again for being on, sir.
Yes, thank you very much. Greatly appreciate it. It's always a good time and an honor to be here.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you, and I appreciate what you bring. You're a good guy to work with. We go back and forth very well, and I enjoy that stuff. It's very meaningful, especially when you and I and everybody else in the family here are trying to construct individuals of not only good quality, but standards that can't be matched. And I look forward to working with you for many years. As a great Les Brown says, you'll have greatness, but we'll go a couple steps further. We believe in you, and we got your back. And I don't know many people that would even say that. So for Mike T. Nelson, he'll be on next month with us. Have a great week, everybody. This is Eric Fiorello, and you know that we're behind your success. And enjoy yourself. Enjoy your life and share your life with somebody that means something to you. Thanks, everyone. And Mike's show, what's today? Thursday? Mike's show will be up either Friday night or Saturday morning, and we'll go from there. Thanks, everybody, and have a great week.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.